Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Good evening, everyone. It is 7 minutes after the top of the hour, and we welcome you to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Tonight's program is presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Our program available on 96.1 WSBT and, of course, at WSBTRadio.com. We're streaming live. And don't forget about the WSBT radio app, which you can acquire right now. It's free. Just go to the iTunes Store, Google Play Store, search WSBT, and listen to Sports Beat wherever you are. Well, we've got Irish basketball tonight from Purcell Pavilion, the regular season finale for the home schedule, as Notre Dame takes on the Pittsburgh Panthers, a winless ACC team. They are 0-17, and it's the return of Bonzi Colson to the Fighting Irish lineup. He'll play for the first time since December 30th. That is our lead topic. We'll get to more on Bonzi coming up in just a matter of seconds from Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Also, with Miami taking down North Carolina in Chapel Hill last night, the ACC tournament bracket looks a little different today. And an individual put together a very interesting bracket today using the Sagarin ratings. If the better team in the Sagarin rating wins each of the last 12 remaining ACC games, where would Notre Dame be seated? We'll tell you coming up in just a couple of moments. The Big Ten tournament will start in New York City in about 22 minutes. Also, high school basketball sectionals got underway last night. Penn rallied to take down the Mishawaka Cavemen at Mishawaka High School, wrapping up our high school basketball coverage for the year. My five question of the day, I'll take control of this question. The top five elements of tonight's Notre Dame-Pittsburgh men's basketball game I'm most looking forward to. Next hour, we have Rapid Fire. Tom Uziak, minor league correspondent for the Cubs Den and Locked On Cubs, will discuss the top pitching prospects in the Chicago Cubs system. The prospect list put out by MLB Pipeline and Baseball America, they are filled with pitchers, mainly because the Cubs have drafted a ton of pitching the last few years and not a lot of position players, so there should be more pitching prospects. But who are the best and who might end up in South Bend? It could be a very good staff in the first half of the South Bend Cubs season. We'll get to that conversation right around 6:25. Then at 6:40, we're off to Purcell Pavilion. Jack Nolan will host pregame coverage of Notre Dame and Pittsburgh with the opening tip set for 7 o'clock on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Eric Hansen, after a few days off, rejoins the program today. Nice to see you.
Nice to be back.
And you'll be gone tomorrow. And you'll be gone Friday. Well, kind of. You will not be here in person. But thanks to technology, Eric's going to join us from Indianapolis. He's going to be covering Notre Dame football players at the NFL Combine tomorrow and Friday, and we'll be phoning in from there and also providing us with some comments from those Notre Dame football players. And I see today we have some of our first facts and figures from the NFL Combine as McGlinchey and Nelson, their height and weight was all decided today. We'll get to that coming up in just a couple of moments. But you got a lot of work to do down there. There's a lot of Notre Dame players that are going to be at the Combine and all really a part of the whole proceedings at the same time.
Yeah, and I feel the pressure now because I saw a headline today that Quentin Nelson impressed at weigh-in, and I need to get to the bottom of, did he have special underpants on? Did he step on the scale in an impressive way? I thought that was a pretty funny headline.
We'll put you in charge of his underpants analysis. I'm just going to listen in. And
well, we're not invited to that. I'm just going to an interview with him, but I'm going to find out why he was so impressive weighing in. I thought you just kind of stepped on the scale.
Well, just like when we talk recruiting, I do a lot of listening, let the experts do all the important work to get all the details, so I'll let you just tell me all about that tomorrow.
Okay, well, I'm sure Quentin may not be real forthcoming with it, but I figure McGlinchey will spill the beans.
Well, there's a little buzz about Quentin Nelson as a tackle in the NFL, so let's talk about that in a couple of moments.
Okay.
Let's save that for our next segment right around 5:30, because, I mean, there has been some buzz about Nelson possibly being a tackle in the NFL. We know he's going to be a superstar if he is an interior offensive lineman, so we'll get to that conversation coming up in just a couple of moments. But Irish basketball fans have been waiting on this for a long, long time, as Bonzi Colson will be in the Fighting Irish starting lineup tonight when Notre Dame takes on Pittsburgh. The official announcement came from Notre Dame basketball's Twitter account last night. They put together a very nice video. It was a great job of using social media to pass along some news, and Bonzi is back. The last time Bonzi Colson played in a basketball game, it was 2017. December 30th. He missed 15 games. The Fighting Irish went 6-9, including a 7-game losing streak. Now, in the 14 games that Colson has played this year, he averaged 21 points, 10 rebounds, and was shooting well above his career field goal percentage. After 14 games, he was shooting a whopping 59% from the field. Now, Mike Bray spoke with members of the ESPN group last night, and he told ESPN he's hoping Colson could play 20 minutes tonight. Now, initially, it was like 10, 12, 13 minutes. Let's see how it goes. So, obviously, Monday and Tuesday were Bonzi's first 2 days of actual practice with the team. Late last week was individual work. He was working with the team Monday and Tuesday. Must have got rave reviews, because now we're talking 20 minutes. So, if he goes 20 minutes, you might see even a few more minutes in that if all goes well tonight against Pittsburgh. But let's be honest, Pittsburgh starting four freshmen, they're 0-17 in the ACC. You really don't need 30 minutes of Bonzi Colson tonight if everything goes as planned. And this is going to turn into the Colson family night of nights. Besides Bonzi returning to the floor, starting and playing what appears to be a good chunk of minutes, his sister Sydney is going to sing the national anthem tonight. So big night for the Colson family. And here's what Bonzi had to say on Monday, talking about how he's feeling and getting back out on the floor.
Feeling good. Just trying to ease and get back into things slowly. And, started today. I had to do a jump test and this force test that I had to do, and I improved on it from last week. So I'm just getting better and just trying to take it easy and still staying patient with it. Just see how it feels overall, running on it, defending, shooting, going live is going to be big today. So just seeing how it feels, I think that's the most important thing. I think these next 2 days, today and tomorrow, are going to be important, how my body feels after practice. And, having great communication with Skip, Coach Bray, and T-Row, and just telling them how we feel, while practice.
And again, apparently, he must have felt really good Monday and Tuesday if Mike Bray is now talking about Bonzi playing possibly 20 minutes tonight in his return to the Fighting Irish lineup. Eric, the great thing about Bonzi's game, he is not a one-dimensional offensive player. So if he was a player that needed to put the ball on the deck and get to the basket, or he had to cut a lot, that might be a little more difficult for him coming back from his injury. But you just take a look at all the different ways he can put the ball in the basket. I feel like this can be a nice transition for him. He can play in the low block. He can hit jump shots facing up to the basket. We know he can hit three-point shots. So this may not be the normal Bonzi Colson game. Who knows? Maybe he'll surprise us and we'll see the old Bonzi. I guess I'm going to lower my expectations with this being the first time out. But if he's not feeling comfortable putting the ball on the floor, doing a little drive, a little spin move, a little fadeaway, he's got that mid-range jumper, face up to the basket, hit shots. He can hit outside shots. So on a night in which they probably don't have to be perfect playing Pittsburgh, I feel like his versatility and his offensive game with the different things that he can do allows him to figure out a way to get involved in the offense without maybe being that normal Bonzi Colson as he works his way up to that point.
Well, whatever he's able to give them in the 20 minutes or whatever it turns out to be, it's got to be an upgrade from what they have been playing, especially when you don't have DJ Harvey as an option. You're really playing 4-on-5 offensively at times, so anything Bonzi can give them is a bonus. And then defensively, I think he's a decent player. The one thing when he's coming back, you always kind of wonder how the chemistry is because he hasn't had a lot of practices with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
But you're playing Pittsburgh, so if there's going to be a game where there's going to be a little bit of a turbulent reentry, I guess this would be the opponent to have. 0-17 in ACC play.
So this is like Apollo 13 a little bit.
Oh, it's like Apollo 13 a little bit. A
little rocky reentry.
Yeah.
But it'll be fine. Bonzi's going to be just fine, I have a feeling. Well, you take a look at the big three in this senior class, Colson, Farrell, and Gebbitt. Now, Colson's not going to have the senior year that he wanted because of the injury. But before the injury, again, 21 points, 10 rebounds, shooting 59% from the field, was playing really, really great basketball for this team, on pace for an All-American season. You look at Matt Farrell, he had to deal with the injury bug. He missed 5 games, but still, he's averaging 17 points per game, 5.5 assists, doing everything you wanted him to do leading into this senior season. And then you talk about Martinus Gebbitt. What a tremendous season Gebbitt is having. 11.1 points per game, 8 rebounds a contest. You think back to what his career has been. As a freshman, 8 minutes a game, average 1.6 points. As a sophomore, down to 3 minutes, 1.4 points. Last year, 12.4 minutes per game. He averaged 3 points and 3.4 rebounds. And this year, he stuck around. Could have left. Stuck around for one more year. Had that great summer experience with the Lithuanian team and the World Games. And came back and 11 points, 8 rebounds per ball game. Has been a double-double machine throughout this ACC season. Probably will be the most improved player in the ACC. So take away the Colson injury. Colson was playing great before that. Farrell has played terrific basketball this year. And Gebbitt has really come into his own during his senior campaign. And Mike Bray really appreciates this senior class and the way that their senior seasons have unfolded.
I told Bonzi and Matt, I had him in my office on Tuesday, and I said, you guys have been spoiled, really. I said, there's not a lot of college players that play in the NCAA tournament 4 out of 4 years, but think about what you've been done. And now, they've been spoiled. They've earned it. Those guys have all been part of spoiling themselves and spoiling all of us. You look at their run, and I think it's very fitting that they're the all-time winningest class. And I have a lot of respect for them for how they've hung in there this year with some of their comrades in the senior class not available at times. They've continued to set a great tone and keep us plugging and help some of the younger guys in the program, feel that we still have a chance. They've had great years, and I'm thrilled with what Martin Gebbitt is doing this year. I mean, to step in with Bonzi being out and doing what he's doing, I just think he's the best candidate for most improved in this league. Maddie's been Maddie, and all guys, they weren't McDonald's All-Americans. They were four-year guys that were going to, hang in there and get better with us. And it's neat to see that, as seniors, they've played their best.
If you believed all those recruiting services, you probably would have thought Notre Dame would have won 10 or 11 games this year, going back 4 years ago. These guys have turned out to be...
You're a big fan of the recruiting services, too, I remember.
I'm telling you, it's the guy who bags groceries over at Martin's who puts together the football star list. I'm still convinced of that. I've never seen the star guy and the Martin's guy in the same place. But seriously, they were not guys that the Blue Bloods were wanting, but Bonzi Colson, a coach's son, has just improved steadily each and every year. Farrell just... the heartbeat of the basketball team, and Gebbitt just a senior season to remind everyone that's why you don't give up on guys. Had you given up on Martinus Gebbitt, where would this team would have been with all the injuries if you wouldn't have had Martinus Gebbitt on this roster? Had he went the route of Matt Ryan, the former three-point shooter who decided to transfer. If Gavin would have followed in his footsteps, we would not be talking about the NCAA tournament bubble right now. They would have clinched a first-round game, and they would have had, well, a season that would not have been as much fun as the season has been glorious, trust me, with all the injuries and everything, but it would have been a whole lot worse without Martinus Gebben around. So, tonight in the ACC, a couple of games worth watching from a Notre Dame perspective. Florida State is at Clemson, Syracuse on the road to take Boston College. Now, there is a formula for Notre Dame to get to the number 9 seed in the ACC tournament in Greensboro, but it is pretty strict. The only way for Notre Dame to get to the number 9 seed would be for Florida State to lose twice, and they have to play at Clemson, home against BC, and one loss by Syracuse at BC and Clemson. So they play the same two teams. That's how Notre Dame finds a way to get to the number 9 seed in the ACC tournament. Now, an individual went into the Sagarin ratings and used those ratings to figure out who is the favorite in the final 12 remaining ACC conference games. So let's give the victory to the favorite in all 12 of those games. Okay. There's no upsets. If that is what unfolds in the ACC, Notre Dame would be the number 11 seed in the ACC tournament. So they need help in order to move up from that spot. Using this scenario of the higher-ranked Sagarin team winning the final 12 remaining ACC games, Notre Dame's road would be this. As the 11 seed, the Irish would take on the 14 seed Wake Forest, a team they trailed by 8 with 8 minutes to go on the road over the weekend, rallied to win. That game would be Tuesday at 7 o'clock. If the Irish win, the 6th seed is now North Carolina under that scenario. Miami beat Carolina in Chapel Hill last night, 91-88, and that really flipped the possibilities in the ACC tournament seedings. So it would be North Carolina in the next round for Notre Dame Wednesday at 9 o'clock. So that looks a whole lot different than the possible game against a team like Louisville or Miami in that spot. If Notre Dame would beat North Carolina, they would be in the quarterfinals and would take on the 3-seed Miami. So Miami made the big jump in this exercise. The semifinal matchup would likely be against the number 2-seed Duke, and then it would be a team like number 1 Virginia in the championship game. So under that Sagarin rating scenario, Notre Dame would be the 11 seed, and the road would be Wake Forest, North Carolina, Miami, and Duke. There's a lot of arsenal there. There's a lot of big win capabilities once you get by Wake Forest to help the Notre Dame resume, and that appears to be what is necessary. It is more quality over quantity wins right now for this Fighting Irish basketball team. And as we have talked about, the way Bonzi plays tonight and through the ACC tournament could be helpful to Notre Dame as the committee tries to figure out who Notre Dame is after losing Bonzi for 15 basketball games. And again, I caution everybody with Bonzi Colson. They lost at home to Ball State. They lost on a neutral floor to Indiana, two teams that will not make the NCAA tournament. They were fully healthy at that time. And those are wins that look like warts right now on this NCAA tournament resume. But if you can take down the Carolinas and the Miamis and maybe Virginia, then all of a sudden those warts start to disappear a little bit. You just need quality wins right now. That's what it comes down to.
Right. And again, they'll measure this team with Bonzi and how effective they are. I almost think that they're better off not getting to the 9 seed where they could play a team seated lower than them first to give him another game to get reintegrated to the team and then start playing the team seated higher than them. That kind of gives them another win. It's not a quality win, but it just gives them another win and another chance to get him back into the swing of things.
I argued against that the last couple of days.
Did you? Yeah.
Because well, here's why I like being the 9 seed. First off, it's one less game for Bonzi. Playing that first round game against whomever is not going to help your resume. It's just going to be another victory. It's not going to be helpful. It's not going to be a wow victory, a quadrant one victory, as they're calling it now. Plus, you have a chance to pick up wow victories if you are the number 9 seed playing an 8 seed and a 1 seed back-to-back. I mean, if you beat Virginia in the regular season, then you beat like a Virginia Tech, and then you have a chance to play Virginia again, all of a sudden your resume looks a lot different. So I just feel like they need those wild victories. And I compared it to the scene in Caddyshack. The guy on the boat, his eyes got really big when Rodney Dangerfield's coming. That's the type of wins Notre Dame needs right now. They don't need nice wins. They need those wow wins.
Yeah, I think I would want to stay away from Virginia. I'd be happy playing anybody else but them in the tournament.
They only score 50 points a game. You can beat them. Piece of cake, right?
Oh, gosh. Let's see when they play them in the regular season in Charlottesville.
Nothing to lose.
Yep.
If you're Notre Dame, nothing to lose, and Virginia's the number one seed of the ACC tournament. They're the regular season champions. They're just playing for senior day. And will that be enough motivation? We'll have to see. 26 minutes after 5 o'clock, Eric and Darren with you. When we come back, a couple of Notre Dame football notes. We'll take a look at the start of the Big Ten tournament and a whole lot more as SportsBeat continues. Brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. .532 on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 WSBT, along with Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. My name is Darren Pritchett. SportsBeat tonight brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. In 68 minutes, it'll be the Notre Dame basketball pregame show. Jack Nolan will take care of business. It's Notre Dame and Pittsburgh tonight. The opening tip at 7 o'clock on 96.1 WSBT. More of the Irish coming up in just a little bit. Eric will be off for the NFL Combine tomorrow. He'll also be there on Friday, bringing us coverage of the Notre Dame players at the Combine. Of course, everything that he finds out from the Combine will be in the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. It's you and Tyler James going, correct?
We are.
All right. So it'll be fun to hear what these Notre Dame players have to say when they meet the media. Quentin Nelson, very low-key. Mike McGlinchey, I think, will be a big hit at the Combine.
Josh
very outspoken.
Adams. He'll be kind of in the middle.
He'll be in the middle. That's a good call.
Durham Smythe will be kind of fun, kind of interesting. And then EQ, you're never quite sure what you're going to get with EQ. He's pretty laid back, but his dad definitely isn't. And they have that HBO special on the St. Browns, which I'm sure is going to be an interesting topic that's brought up to Equanimeous.
I watched 3 or 4 minutes of it. I didn't get a chance to see the whole thing. I don't get HBO. But it was a lot about his dad being that bodybuilder and looking at some of the pictures.
Yeah.
Woof. He was Mr. Universe, right? A couple of times?
Yeah.
Pretty impressive. All right, so that's coming up. NFL Combine coverage in the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. We'll cover it right here on WSBT Radio. Notre Dame Pro Day is coming up on March the 20th.
22nd, I think.
Yeah, just like I said, the 22nd.
Right.
So that's right around the corner as well. Okay, let's...
And spring practice starts Tuesday.
It does.
Yes.
I'll jot that down.
Yes.
All right. So Tuesday, which means probably BK speaks on Monday.
That's what we would assume.
Okay.
Telepathically, that is the information that we are receiving.
Telepathically.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. That's how we get our information now. We're going to have to change up. That'll save on batteries.
There you go.
Okay. So at the NFL Combine today, Notre Dame's offensive linemen went through measurements. Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey. I don't know, Eric, if anything stood out or not, but Quentin Nelson at 6'5", 325, the arm length at 33 6/8, wingspan at 82 5/8. I mean, everybody, I think it's fair to say, that's going through this process covering the NFL draft believes Quentin Nelson is one of the best five players in this draft, regardless of position. That doesn't mean he's going to go on the top five due to need. And interior offensive linemen are not normally hot commodities in the top 10. But he is a difference maker at offensive guard, one of the best offensive guards that has come through the draft in many, many years. There's a little buzz about possibly Nelson being a tackle in the National Football League. Do you have a read on this situation?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen, but I think, you know, you got between now and the draft, you've got 2 months to kind of fill. So the angle that Quentin Nelson is soft wouldn't be bought by anybody. So now I think it's that he could become a tackle. I think some of it is a couple things. One is he ended up with an 82 5/8-inch wingspan, which is, when you think about Mike McGlinchey at 81 inches at 6'7 7/8", then you say, well, wait a second, he's certainly got that in his corner. And you know, I think some people think he's a good enough athlete to pull that off.
He'd have to lose a few pounds, I would think.
Yeah, at 325, you would think that he would have to lose some. You know, he was a left tackle in high school. And they look at hand size too, 10 3/8. And so there are measurables that would translate, you know, to that. But I don't know. I think that he's so good at what he does. Why would you move him?
I agree.
Elsewhere? I think it's just a conversation point. Again, we've got 2 months until the draft, and the Quentin Nelson, a soft angle, will never sell. And if you did try to sell it, I have a feeling he would come over and sit on you.
And you would lose all credibility.
Right.
As an NFL draft reporter or analyst. Mike McGlinchey today at the Combine, 6'7 7/8". His weight at 309 pounds. Arms at 34. Wingspan at 81. So everything looks pretty good from a Mike McGlinchey standpoint as teams evaluate Mike as a left tackle and or a right tackle and likely first round, early second round pick in the upcoming NFL draft. Does anybody from the Notre Dame family that's going to be involved in the combine, is there anybody that has to worry about going through the measurements? Because it just seems like, you know, Josh Adams seems to have the size and strength. It's just whether he can stay healthy is the big question. EQ has the size. Smythe looks to fit the part. So it doesn't seem like anybody has major concerns through the measurables.
Especially since these two measured exactly what Notre Dame had them within, you know, I mean, Quentin Nelson wasn't 6'3 3/8". He was 6'5", just as he was listed. Mike McGlinchey was listed at 6'8", only because we round up. 6'7 7/8". You know, I don't think you're going to see anybody else fudging. I mean, medicals are going to be big for Josh Adams just because he's had a severe knee injury in high school. He's had other injuries in college. So when he goes and gets his medical exams, that's going to be, and then he'll have to interview about things. I think that's the intrigue there. But nothing in the measurable things. The guy that's going to have great interviews is a guy that doesn't play for Notre Dame anymore, and that's Max Redfield. He was invited to the combine as a member of Indiana University of Pennsylvania. Indiana! And
doesn't have the same feel.
Yeah, he will be, so he's going to have lots of character questions to answer because of his arrest and his expulsion from Notre Dame. But yeah, you know, we've had times where Will Fuller, we wonder what he was going to weigh in at. You know, was he going to be too light? And there's other people that you wondered, you know, how accurate their height was. But with these particular players, there's not, you know, EQ is a tall receiver to begin with. Durham Smythe, I think, is going to be somewhere between 6'4 6'5". So nobody where you'd really kind of scratch your head and say, you know, unless they put on a lot of weight or took off a lot of weight since the Citrus Bowl, which I don't think we'll see.
Durham Smythe just appears to be a guy that's going to be a really good fit at being a number two tight end on a team in the National Football League. He's never going to be that dominant guy. He's not going to be split out like a wide receiver, but he's going to be that attached tight end that's going to be physical, help the run game. He's a lot better receiver than I think a lot of people know. I mean, when the ball came his way the last couple of years, he caught it here. Didn't get many opportunities to catch the football compared to other tight ends in other places. But I really think, Eric, he's got the type of skill set that's going to work very well in the NFL. He's going to be that short yardage tight end. He's going to be a very, very solid number two tight end. And so many of the Notre Dame tight ends become number one tight ends in the NFL. Kyle Rudolph, Anthony Fasano, Tyler Eifert. Smythe's not going to be that guy. But I don't want to downgrade him because being a number two tight end is extremely important, and he'll get a lot of snaps in the National Football League.
Yeah, and I mean, he really developed well at Notre Dame. He was a three-star kid, you know, which three stars generally don't translate to what you would think as a future NFL player. And I think two things that were really good for Durham was that he got invited to the Senior Bowl, which doesn't always happen for a lower-round pick. And that he did well in the practices and in the games. All that helped him a lot. So I think, you know, it would be a shocker if he weren't taken in the later rounds and had to go the free agent route. I just think he's really solidified himself. And we'll see how he performs at the combine here. Now, what happens here, Darren, is the players generally perform the day after they do interviews. So Josh Adams, Quentin Nelson and McGlinchey will all do interviews tomorrow, and they'll do the bulk of their workouts on Friday. But they may do their bench tomorrow as well. And then we'll talk to Durham, Smythe, and Equanimeous on Friday, and they will work out Saturday and so on and so forth. So all the Notre Dame guys are in the first 2 days of interview windows.
Okay, so Adams, McGlinchey, and Nelson will speak tomorrow.
Adams, McGlinchey, and Nelson tomorrow.
All right, so if all goes well, and you don't have to send it telepathically,
right,
we'll have some audio for you here tomorrow. Yep. And, of course, follow IndyInsider.com and the South Bend Tribune for the latest on all things Notre Dame at the NFL Combine. Are you guys going to have a chance to hear from Redfield, or is that later in the weekend?
He's going to be Sunday. I'm not sure if we're going to go back down for him because that'll be a day in the middle. We may make arrangements to do something else. He may be very open with things. He may be very closed. And if he's open, it's definitely worth going down for. But, you know, we'll just have to see. Certainly better be open with the people that are interviewing him, that are GMs and coaches. He can be closed with the media if he wants.
Well, from a perception standpoint, it probably would be wise to be open to the media because NFL ears are still listening.
Yeah,
and if you can be a stand-up guy in front of the media, it's not easy to do, but if you can stand up and say, hey, I screwed up, whatever the case may be, I think that really helps the situation.
It does, because they're watching to see how he handles that, because if he decides, hey, I'm just going to give one-word answers and be tight-lipped about it, what's going to happen when he's in their uniform and people are asking him those questions?
Get it over with now.
Yep.
My best advice. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, 5:43 on your home of the Irish. Notre Dame in Pittsburgh, pregame at 6:40, opening tip at 7 o'clock here on WSBT Radio. The Big Ten Men's Basketball Tournament, believe it or not, is underway right now at Madison Square Garden in New York City. There are a pair of first-round games today. Game number one features the 13-seed Illinois taking on the 12-seed Iowa. And just a couple of minutes into the game, it is Iowa 6 and Illinois 5. So I guess the loser is the first team eliminated from March Madness, even before March Madness. Okay. You get eliminated on February 28th. So, if I'm not mistaken, the loser is the first Division I team eliminated from the NCAA tournament. Congratulations to whoever that team is. Game number two, it'll be the 14-seed Rutgers taking on the 11-seed Minnesota. Then tomorrow at Madison Square Garden, a couple of area teams will take the floor for the first time at the world's most famous arena. Coming up in game number two tomorrow, probably around 2:45, it'll be the 5-seed Michigan taking on the winner of the Illinois-Iowa game. And then also the last game of the day, probably around 8:30, 9 o'clock, it'll be the 6-seed Indiana taking on the winner of Rutgers and Minnesota. And the winner of the Illinois-Iowa game gets an autographed basketball from Deion Thomas.
Whoa.
To celebrate the victory over their arch rival. There's a little inside joke there. If you remember back in the old Bruce Pearl days, it got a little interesting back in the late 80s.
I got some contrary news for you.
Contrary news?
Yes, that they won't be the first team eliminated.
No.
Do you know who was?
Who?
Presbyterian Blue Hose.
No! You're kidding!
They lost to Charleston Southern in the Big South tournament last night. High Point also lost. And there were a couple of Patriot League games, it looks like. And
that's too bad.
Yeah. So the Blue Hose will not be in the NCAA tournament this year.
They'll have plenty of time on their hands.
Yeah. I'm not saying anything more. I just wanted to let you know that that was the case. So Illinois will or Iowa will not have that distinction.
It's too bad.
Yeah.
Because Illinois could say, well, in 2005, they were the last team eliminated, and they could have been the first in 2018. Not many teams can say that.
There you go.
Unreal. All right, so that's what's happening in the Big Ten tournament. Purdue will not play until Friday, and they're the last game of the night on Friday as the 3 seed. They will take on either Rutgers, Minnesota, or Indiana in a quarterfinal matchup. So that's what's going on in the Big Ten tournament. And real quick, of course, we've been the home of Mishawaka Cayman basketball this year. Mishawaka was up 24-11 in their sectional matchup against Penn last night. In first-round play at Mishawaka High School, Penn roared back, and they beat Mishawaka 52-48. Penn versus undefeated South Bend Riley Friday night at 6:30 at Mishawaka High School. Adams top LaPorte 62-44. It's the Eagles and the Clay Colonials Friday night at 8 o'clock at Elkhart. Goshen defeated Warsaw 58-45. They've got two games tonight at Northside Gym. One will get started in 10 minutes. Memorial versus Plymouth. Then it's Central versus Concord. Over at Washington last night, Marion rallied to force overtime and beat Washington 50-47. They'll face John Glenn Friday at 6. And tonight at Washington, St. Joe will take on Jimtown at 6 o'clock. Should be a win for the Indians. And New Prairie against Culver Academies at 7:30. That's what's happening with Hoosier Hysteria. 13 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you coming up next. The top five elements from tonight's Notre Dame-Pittsburgh men's basketball game that we are most looking forward to. Answers coming up in just a couple of moments on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Today, we are counting down the top five elements of tonight's Notre Dame-Pittsburgh men's basketball game that Darren is looking most forward to. And we'll start with number five.
All right. Number five is, why is Pittsburgh 0-17?
Good.
I want to say it's really hard to go an entire conference season without winning, but Boston College has pulled that off in the ACC. Pittsburgh's best player is no longer on the team. I believe he's at North Carolina now.
Ooh.
They start four freshmen, and it has been a miserable year for Kevin Stallings after leaving Vanderbilt 2 years ago, taking over Pittsburgh, and I just want to see how bad is.
Okay.
And I hope it's on display tonight. That's a good sign for the Irish.
All right, we go to number four.
Number four, how different does the big man rotation look tonight? Let's play along with Mike Bray, who told ESPN that he believes Colson possibly could play 20 minutes tonight. Well, Martin Esgebin's going to get his 30 minutes. So who's going to be the guy to eat up some minutes? Is it going to change dramatically? Burns has started to get a little more playing time compared to Torres, and I'm good with that. And I just wonder how much Burns will play tonight and Torres. It's senior night, so Torres is going to get his minutes, you would have to think, considering Notre Dame should win this game going away in the second half, again, if everything goes as planned. But I would just like to see in the first half, when game pressure is on, how different the big man rotation looks with Colson back.
Right, and you got to figure Mooney in there, too. Now.
Moon River.
Number three.
The emotion of Matt Farrell after this game. We have seen the highs and lows from Farrell, the unbelievable shooting performance at BC, the heartbreak on his face after losing to Miami when you felt like it had all slipped away for that chance to go to the NCAA tournament. There's a heartbeat again for the NCAA tournament. And with this being his last game at Purcell Pavilion during the regular season, he just lost his grandfather on Sunday, who in his hospital bed saw his grandson hit that game-winning shot against Wake Forest. With the NCAA tournament, with Bonzi returning, with the heartbreak of losing his grandfather, the emotion of Matt Farrell, it could be one of those really, really good, tough nights for this gritty, gritty player from the East Coast.
Number two,
does Gebben still get a good number of touches with Bonzi Colson back? My answer is yes. I still feel like he is such a good presence down in the low block. Now, he's not going to get as many. We all know that because Farrell's got to get his shots. Gibbs has to get his touches. And, of course, Bonzi's back. There's going to be some shots put up there. But I don't want everybody to forget about Martinus Gebben, Eric, because he has been a huge part of this offense during the stretch run trying to keep this team afloat.
We're counting down the top five elements of tonight's Notre Dame-Pittsburgh men's basketball game that Darren and everybody else should be most looking forward to. Number five was, why is Pittsburgh 0-17? Number four, how different does this big man rotation look? Number three, the emotion of Matt Farrell after the game. Number two, does Martinus Gebben still get a good number of touches? And the number one element of tonight's Notre Dame-Pittsburgh men's basketball game that Darren is looking forward to the most is...
what percentage of the old Bonzi can this Bonzi be tonight? He hasn't played since December 30th. It's going to be around 20 minutes of basketball. Is he going to be 50% of the old Bonzi? Is he going to be 70%? I'm just really curious to see how quickly he's going to bounce back. He looked good shooting the basketball before a media session the other day, but how close to the old Bonzi will he be tonight? And that wraps up
the My Five Question of the Day on 96.1, the sports leader.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, Tom will have all the latest from tonight's Notre Dame-Pittsburgh men's basketball game. I have a story about what Brandon Wimbush did between the Citrus Bowl and coming back to school and how he tried to fix his passing game. Scads of high school basketball sectionals and Michigan game, Water Elite and Brandywine, and much, much more.
Eric, thank you. We'll hear from you from the NFL Combine tomorrow, top of the WSBT South.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
We do not have a lot of time to chat because at 6:40, it's Notre Dame basketball on 96.1 WSBT. Jack Nolan with the pregame at 6:40 and led the play-by-play at 7 o'clock. Here on the Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT. It's Notre Dame taking on Pittsburgh senior night. Big night for Martinus Gebben, Matt Farrell, and oh yeah, that guy is back in the starting lineup, Bonzi Colson. Notre Dame basketball made the announcement on Twitter last night that Bonzi will start. Mike Bray told ESPN.com last night, possibly Bonzi could play 20 minutes tonight. It's amazing how that number continues to go up. That's a really, really good sign.
Exactly.
You almost feel like if they were playing Carolina or Duke or Virginia, if all goes well, maybe that 20 minutes would turn into 24 minutes.
See, you're already pushing it, aren't you?
I'm already pushing it. But the fact we started the week at 10 to 12, 13 minutes, and now
maybe one
20. Oh, gosh. Don't say that. This is exciting because we haven't seen Bonzi since December 30th. Believe it or not.
I know.
But in the starting lineup, and he and Martinus Gebben will be on the floor together tonight, and Mike Bray talked about that combination with the media on Monday, and we're just going to replay this. I know I played it, I think, yesterday, but this is when Gebben was walking by as the question was being asked about these two being on the floor together. Martinus was kind of like, yeah, I want to know the answer to this.
More from him coming back.
Right.
How do you balance him and Gebben?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's one of the things. Yeah, yeah. You're coming off the bench. Can't take him out. You know what? They played pretty darn well together in Maui, playing off of each other. And it's one of those things, like, I don't want to overanalyze or overcoach it, but he needs to continue to stay confident. And we're going to throw it to him in the post to score. And Bonzi can play off of him in post some. And, you know, it'd be a little bit of maybe, you know, if we get back to that, we'll show some film of November of those two guys playing well together.
There you go. We'll see how it goes tonight. Gebben and Colson on the floor together. Before we get to basketball, go ahead.
What do you think the minutes end up being for both of those? Now, you've got an opponent that you should beat handily, one. And then you've got, it is senior night, so there's a possibility we're going to see those two and Austin Torres and Matt Farrell all out on the floor at the same time to start the game. What do you think Bonzi ends up right at 20, or do you think Gebben's averaging around 25 now, and that's overall for the season? His overall average has gone up about 5 minutes a game with Bonzi out. So do you think it's close to 20 apiece, or what do you think it ends up?
For Gebben and Colson?
Yeah.
I think Gebben might lose minutes to Torres tonight, with it being
just
his last game.
There and
you got to get Gregory on the floor a little bit more.
True.
I would hope. On a night like tonight, if you handle Pittsburgh the way that everybody has handled Pittsburgh so far this year.
That's a big thing.
Bonzi, to me, if it's going really, really well, maybe I just say, okay, you're done. If he's still trying to find it, I try to stretch him for a few more minutes, hoping that he gets into more of a rhythm leading into Virginia. So I think the play of Colson, at least if I was the coach, is affected by the way he plays. If he's not in a groove, he's not hitting shots, isn't looking comfortable, I play him a little more if he's healthy.
Right.
But if he's rolling, I'm like, meh, pull the plug.
Yeah, see, and that's, like, you got Virginia this Saturday as well. The first thing is take care of business and get a good enough lead on Pittsburgh so you can think about all these things. But then it allows you, if they're doing that, it allows you to give Gebben a little bit of a break, for one, because his minutes have been so increased without someone someone like Bonzi, where they could split some time a little bit more potentially. But it also gives you then maybe a chance to sort of not high stress minutes for Bonzi if he is out there a little bit more.
Right.
So just to get him out there.
We'll find out tonight. Opening tip at 7 o'clock here on WSBT. Tommy Uzziak talks Chicago Cubs pitching prospects at about 15 minutes right now. Rapid fire.
All right. Kind of along those same lines, we will start there. Fill in the blank. You're expecting blank from Bonzi in his return tonight.
I'm projecting a very solid effort tonight. I'm not going to say spectacular. I'm not going to set high standards. I think if we can see a nice little 12-point, 4-rebound performance, I'm going to be doing somersaults in my living room.
That's kind of what I was thinking. In the 10 to 12-point range would be pretty good. There'll be some rust you would expect because he hasn't played for a couple of weeks, but a couple of months, I guess I should say. But at the same time, it's not like they don't come into the season and they have to kind of ramp things up. And
he's been shooting a lot through this entire period, too.
Yeah. So maybe his shot is already there. Who knows? And that's good. I was originally thinking, do I do an over-under of like 9 or 10 or something like that? And then I think 10 to 12, and like you said, 4 or 5 rebounds, something like that. And again, we're going to see some other guys, at least for different stretches, because it is senior night and because you would hope that they put the pedal to the metal against a Pitt team that has not won an ACC game since about a year ago. Calendar year ago at this point. Man. All right, Big Ten tournament starts today. It's a week earlier than usual, of course. A writer who covers Michigan State recently listed 5 reasons why he thinks playing the tournament before everyone else, in other words, playing it now, is the way to go in the future. Now, exclude the whole it's at Madison Square Garden. He just thinks you find a way to play it this week as opposed to next week and everybody else's plan. I'll run through the 5 reasons here real quick, okay? They're relatively short. The championship game actually matters is his number one.
Why wouldn't it matter if it was a week later?
Because typically, you know, Big Ten is the last one to wrap up, so they're wrapping up their game when the selection committee is wrapping up.
So seeding could be affected.
Yeah. seating.
All right. That's all right.
That, this is going to be part of the question.
I'll shut up.
Okay.
I'll
shut up. I already get you, I get your point on that. The Big Ten gets to shine on its own weekend is his number two. Teams have time to recover so they can go all out in the conference tournament is his number three. Four is time to digest where you are and where you stand and make decisions about, I guess, what you're going to do when the NCAA tournament comes around. And then the fifth one is potentially better results in the NCAA tournament because you've got a week off to rest your legs and all that kind of stuff. So do you buy any of those as good enough reason? And you're a lifelong Big Ten follower. Do you buy any of those as good enough reason to play the tournament this week as opposed to the standard week in conference tournament play going forward?
This guy has some oceanfront property in Arizona to sell to everybody that read his article. That's hogwash. That's ridiculous. If this was such a big deal, Sean, if this was such a big deal, the ACC, the Big East, the Big 12 would all be doing the same thing. They don't have any problem winning championships.
No.
By playing the week leading up to the NCAA tournament. That's someone taking the other side trying to get attention, in my opinion.
And maybe it is. Maybe it is. I'll rank mine. The having time to recover, I do think that's a thing. Because, now, like you said, we've been talking about Notre Dame and what they would have to do. If they end up in one of those first games, that's five games in 5 days if you get to the championship. Now, that is a lot.
Irish won the ACC tournament, went to the Elite Eight.
But they also did. They also got a double bye to start off. They didn't have to play those first two games. So, and again, I'm not saying that I completely buy in on this. I'm just ranking them in the order that I think that I would buy them, and that would be the first one. Not that it would be a big, you know, a big buy for me.
Sorry, I'm just being bullheaded on this one.
No, that's okay.
Go ahead.
I understand. You're against it all the way. And better results in the tournament, maybe. I don't know. But like you said, a lot of smaller conference teams have to, they've had to play their way in, and then they've sat there in those play-in games and made runs. So there is an argument against that, but that's what I would put possibly number two. The Big Ten getting its own weekend to shine, really, and I could even see me moving that one up higher because it is. They've got the week to themselves right now in terms of TV and all that for the most part. There are going to be some games to close out the regular season, but these games aren't going to matter more this week while everybody else is just playing at the end of the regular season. And then I've got the championship game actually matters. I don't think that matters much. And the time to digest, I don't think that matters at all. So that's how I would rank them in order of if I was going to buy them.
Chance to shine. You're the final game before the brackets come out. So people are watching that game waiting for the brackets to come out.
Yeah. The rest thing I do think, and again, yeah, teams have played conference championship games, played multiple games in their conference tournament, and then gone on to at least the Final Four or win championship games or whatever. Yeah, it's not like it's never been done. But at the same time, I think especially that first weekend, depending on, like, if you have to play Thursday and you ended up playing four games and wrapped up Sunday, that's a lot. That can tax you. So that's again, I'm not saying it can't be done because you're giving me that look, but I think it is a thing.
Man, oh man. Frustrating.
All right. Last one for you probably before we have to take a break and get to Tom Muzak and talk a little Cubs pitching here coming up. We'll switch gears and we'll go to the NFL. Do you buy or sell the possibility of the NFL limiting pass interference penalties to a maximum of 15 yards? They are talking about doing that.
You know, I really honestly don't have an opinion one way or the other. I think in the college game, 15 yards makes sense because it's still football players developing their trade.
Sure.
Professionally, you throw the deep ball, you pull down someone, and you prevent a big play. And if you only got 15 yards, then that's a pretty good weapon for defensive players. So, you know, just off the top of my head, since I didn't get this beforehand, I'm going to say I like the way the rule is now.
Yeah, I don't really like the rule on a couple of different levels the way it is right now. For one, yeah, you're right. The defensive back can just tackle a guy 40 yards downfield, and then it would just be a 15-yard penalty if they change it. But I've never been a fan of the current rule because 40 and 50-yard completions downfield are still a pretty low percentage of completed passes at any level, whether it's the NFL or in college. So rewarding, because you really still don't know that a guy is going to make that catch, and giving the a reward like that, I've never really liked it. The bigger thing to me, so maybe as opposed to capping it at 15, maybe you make it 20 if it's more than 20 yards downfield. The bigger thing to me, though, is I've never liked the pass interference in the end zone penalty that spots the ball at the 1 yard line, especially if you are outside the 30-yard line or something like that. I'd rather see half the distance to the goal somewhere along those lines rather than, because you do see it quite a bit where you're outside the 20, you get a pass interference in the end zone. Next thing you know, you've got first and goal at the 1 yard line. That's the one that I've never liked. So maybe not as much the whole capping it at 15. And I agree with what you're saying, because college has that rule because these guys are still developing. They're not, quote unquote, my air quotes going up, professionals. So they're learning the trade.
I like that.
And the question is, can you keep winning? I don't know.
I don't either.
Thank you, Lou.
That's it for tonight.
That's all you want to do?
That's it.
You're done.
I don't think we've got enough time to get to the last one. So
right. We've got 2 minutes to work with, but I'll leave it up to you.
Well, maybe we do, because this one probably won't take that long. We are going to talk Cubs pitching with Tom Uzziak in a minute. So this one does go along with that. John Lester is going to be the Cubs opening day starter. Big deal, little deal, no deal at all.
No deal. They're playing the Marlins, aren't they? So they can start pretty much anybody. It doesn't matter.
These Marlins, they don't have anybody now. They're going to be a Triple-A team.
You go with seniority. It's kind of one of those tip of the cap to the veteran players. So I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's what I think it is. It's the third time in 4 years that Lester's been the starter. Arrieta got the other. And I think it's, I mean, they have three viable options, whether it's him, Hendricks, you, Darvish, and I think that's really where the question came up, because Darvish, with his signing, who's going to be the opening day guy? I don't think it's a big deal either, and Kyle Hendricks was actually asked about it. I saw it today, and he said, who cares about the first game? I'll take the last game, meaning the World Series. Let's go for that.
Done.
Yeah. So, and I think by addressing it now as well, it doesn't keep coming up over for the next month at spring training. Lester's the guy. You get it taken care of. Overall, it's not that big a deal because they're all going to pitch anyway. So
Quintana has an argument too.
Yeah.
You can make an argument for him. A lot of good choices.
Yep.
Go with the veteran grumpy guy. John never smiles.
Why not?
Make him happy on opening day. That's Rapid Fire. We will take a timeout. We've got a SportsCenter update. Then we will hear from Tom Uzziak from the Cubs Den and Locked On Cubs to talk about some interesting pitching prospects in the Chicago Cubs system. A couple of those will be in South Bend this year. That's coming up. And, of course, Notre Dame basketball begins at 6:40. The Irish and the Pittsburgh Panthers on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. It is 6:25 at 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, along with Sean Stiers. I'm Darren Pritchett. We continue to survey what's in the Chicago Cubs minor league system as we bring back Tom Uzziak, minor league correspondent for the Cubs Den and writer for Locked On Cubs. And today we're going to talk about a very interesting spot in the Cubs system, and that is pitching. Since 2012, only 80 innings have come from pitchers in the Cubs system. That's it for the Chicago Cubs. That is a remarkable number, but that probably is going to change soon since the Cubs have drafted heavy pitching the last couple of years, which will affect South Bend this year. And we begin by talking to Tom about what's at the major league level. We've got John Lester, Kyle Hendricks, Yu Darvish, Jose Quintana, Tyler Chatwood as the five-man rotation, and that has a chance to be one of the better rotations, Tom, in the National League. A thought on that group and who's next in line, because you always need that number six starter in case of injury or someone not living up to expectation.
Well, good evening, Darren and Sean. I also want to add, too, for those of you who don't quite remember, the Cubs also signed Drew Smyly to a contract. He's on the 60-day injury list. He's eligible to come back off of that at midseason. There's a possibility that Drew Smyly could become the sixth man for that rotation come September. So there's even more that the Cubs can rely on this year. As far as there's not much that you can say about the Cubs rotation except there. I wish I was Kyle Hendricks sitting between John Lester and Yu Darvish. That would be a real great spot for him, you know, with the two lefties and two different style pitchers. I think that the person that's going to benefit most out of this rotation is Hendricks. If he gets back and remains healthy this season, I think that he's going to compete for the Cy Young Award this year. I really like how this is setting up for him.
Tom, when you look at Jose Quintana coming across town from the White Sox, do you think that maybe there's going to be more pressure on him soon with all these big things that we keep hearing about Eloy Jimenez that he was who he was traded for?
I think it's absolutely that there's going to be pressure on Quintana. He probably has got the most pressure out of everyone in this lineup. I mean, John Lester and Kyle Hendricks have been around here for a while. Yu Darvish has been through all this, even though he's got the big contract and is probably going to be a little bit pressing to justify that. But Quintana comes over here. They gave up Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease for him, and that's going to be a lot of pressure to live up to all that talent that they gave up for him, especially since they went out and signed Darvish anyway. So they now have three premium left-handers in their rotation. He's going to have the pressure on him to show that he belongs with those guys.
Tom Uziak from the Cubs Den and Locked On Cubs talking Cubs pitching here on WSBT. Besides Smyly, let's look at the top of the Cubs system for some starting pitching relief. And I know two of the three guys you want to talk about spent time in South Bend: Adbert Alzolay, who had a terrific year last year, and Oscar De La Cruz. To be honest, when he was in South Bend, he did not wow me a whole lot, but maybe he can win me over as he grows. But what does the depth look like besides Smyly in the upper end of the system?
Well, the main pitcher that will be counted on if the Cubs need somebody for their starting rotation will be somebody that we saw towards the end of last season in Jen Ho Sang. Jen Ho is 22 years old. He seems like he's been around for a while, but they signed him out of Taiwan. He automatically went to single-A ball when he came to the Cubs. He's been twice named the Cubs Minor League Pitcher of the Year. Last year, he went 13-4 in the minors with a 2.54 ERA. He pitches very similarly to Kyle Hendricks, and where he's not going to wow you with his velocity or anything like that, but he's very much under control. He's got a good four-pitch repertoire, and he's going to be able to spot those pitches up. So Jen Ho Sang is the person that people are going to need to remember in case the Cubs need that extra person for their starting rotation. Adbert Alzolay, though, is somebody that intrigues the Cubs from not only from the starting rotation standpoint, but they feel that because of his size, he could actually look towards the bullpen in the future. He's got a mid to upper 90s fastball. He does have a very good breaking pitch to go with that. They feel that if he doesn't pan out as a starting pitcher, he could easily move to the bullpen, and with the amount of command that he has of those two pitches, could be very effective. And then, of course, we mentioned De La Cruz. De La Cruz is if you wanted to chisel a monument of a starting pitcher, you'd use De La Cruz as a model for it. I mean, he's 6'6", he's 250 pounds, all muscle, but the big problem with him is that he's been having a lot of injuries, a lot of soft tissue injuries, nothing with his joints or anything like that, but that's cost him playing time.
Tom, the Cubs spent a lot of early draft picks last year on pitching, especially college pitching. Who are some guys that you think we're going to see in South Bend to start off the season?
Well, tell everybody in South Bend to get there early to see some of the pitching, because some may not be there for a little while. Some may not be there for, that long. They may be moving up, and some may be coming a little bit later on. But the number one pitcher that you want to look at is not one of the college pitchers, but somebody that the Cubs signed out of Mexico named Jose Albertos. He's only 19 years old, but he already shows an advanced curve and changeup to go with a mid-90s fastball. In 10 starts last year, he was 2-1 with a 3.14 ERA. The WHIP, who everybody likes to look at, is 1.093. That's very good for a starting pitcher. The only concern that they have with Albertos, besides the fact that he's so young, is that there's been a couple times he's been shut down because they're concerned for injuries with him. He had to sit out almost an entire year with a forearm injury. The one pitcher out of the Cubs draft last year that is a hanger between whether he's going to start in South Bend or go to Advanced A Myrtle A is the second rounder Corey Abbott. He came in and had five starts. He didn't get any kind of record from those starts, but he had a 3.86 ERA, 18 Ks and 14.1 innings pitched. He is the most advanced out of all the Cubs prospects that were drafted this year. He has very good wipeout slider to go with his command. So he's somebody that could be one of the possible opening day starters for South Bend.
Let's talk about Alex Lang, a guy who pitched on the big stage at the College World Series at LSU.
Okay, Alex is also another candidate to be the opening night starter for South Bend. As you said, he was in the College World Series last year, major program. He only had four starts for the Cubs this year, mainly because of all the work that he got in the College World Series. They wanted to take very carefully with him. He also left early in order to complete his degree. But Alex has got one of the best curveballs already in the system. It's an out pitch that sets up the rest of his pitches. He has a decent low 90s fastball and a slider to go with it, but it's that curve that's going to be dazzling hitters in the Midwest League.
Any other young guys we might be seeing at South Bend down the road this summer?
Well, I'm going to give you a couple more here that were also part of the draft.
Okay.
The first pick that they had was Brendan Little. He's the lone lefty out of the group. He had a little bit harder time coming in here. They already started working on tweaking his motion to the plate and everything like that. So his stats last year were not good, a 9.37 ERA. But they're picked a lot of players with advanced curves, and Little is one of them. They're going to start him for a while, but they may look for him as a bullpen player. Keegan Thompson is a third-round pick. He's got a lot of pitches, including both a two-seam and four-seam fastball, to go with a curve and a change. He did pretty well last year with a 2.37 ERA and a 1.00 WHIP. So he's going to be the pitcher that they're going to rely on for control. And finally, Bailey Clark, who is a pitcher that they drafted in 2016, had a little bit of trouble last year, but now is back on par with what he's doing. He's had 13 starts, a 4.58 ERA, and they're looking for him as a possible end of the rotation or bullpen pitcher because of his upper 90s fastball.
Tom, we're getting a little short on time with Notre Dame basketball a couple of minutes away. Tell people where they can read more of your work as you break down the Cubs minor league system.
You can read my work at both Cubs Den, that's at chicagonow.com/cubsden.com, or you can read me at lockedoncubs.com. Some of the pictures that I've already mentioned are going to be in articles that I've put in the past couple weeks, or we'll be mentioning next week. We're going to be previewing all of South Bend next week. So go to Locked On Cubs if you want to read more about what's going to be happening with your South Bend Cubs.
Very good. Tom, greatly appreciate the time, and we'll speak again next week.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on.
You bet. Tom Uziak from the Cubs Den and also Locked On Cubs. We're going to have to leave SportsBeat right now. Irish basketball seconds away. SportsBeat tonight brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. For Sean, I'm Darren. Enjoy Irish basketball. It's 2 minutes away on WSBT.